fix it at this point. Okay, so this is a model for the universal space. And so I'll write the theorem over here. All of the isotropy groups are either trivial, right, the trivial group, or a conjugate of one of these two Z2s. And the ones that are non-trivial isotropy group are integers. Those are the, and so this is Z2. Well, universal spaces are classified by, if you look at the fixed set by finite subgroups, then it has to be contractible, but of course they're just points in this particular, so it's a very simple example. But interesting enough to actually have some content to proving the result. So gamma is a discrete group, and if we make certain geometric assumptions on the universal space, then you can prove that the Baum-Conn map is split injective. So if your universal space is a finite gamma CW complex, so in other words, there's finitely many gamma orbits, or another way of saying that, if you look at the quotient of this space by the gamma action, it's a finite complex and compact. Yeah. Well, the universal property is that any space that has a gamma action with finite isotropy, there's a unique map up to gamma equivariant homotopy into this universal space.
Which is the largest one in that sense.
Right. And so they're unique up to gamma homotopy equivalence.
Okay, well, I guess any universal thing is unique.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so if we assume that we have a finite gamma CW complex that admits a matrizable compactification we'll call it X such that the following properties hold. So the first one is we want the gamma action to extend to the boundary. The second one, we want this contractibility condition to also be true for the boundary. So in particular, right, that says that the universal space is always contractible, because if you take the trivial group, that's a finite group. And so we also want our space to be contractible. The third one is a technical condition that I'm not going to really discuss, but we want the fixed sets to be dense in the fixed sets of the compactification, again for each finite subgroup H. And the last one, which I'll just write a phrase for, that compact subsets of the universal space shrink at infinity. So I'll just express that in a picture and not make it precise. So again, we want a compactification of this space, and in particular we want it to be contractible. So we wouldn't want to take the one-point compactification. What we'll do is to take the two-point compactification. So it's got the same, right, the induced action where the Z2s are going to flip the points at infinity. And what this compact subset shrinking is saying If you take an interval, and if you look at a translate of that interval by an element in the group, as it gets pushed off to the boundary, it's going to shrink, right? Your intervals here are shrinking. Okay, so that's the picture you want to keep in your mind of what that condition is saying. Okay, so if this is true, then the Baum-Kahn map is split injective. Okay, so I'd like to try to show how you might do this, and you always want to keep this picture in mind. So, first thing is we have to associate a category to this space. So, this is a picture of the cone on X, so X crossed the closed interval, collapse one of the points, and we're going to define a category over this space. So the objects they're going to be infinite dimensional complex vector spaces, but they're going to have a decomposition where the basis is given by the space crossed with the open interval 0, 1. So here the interior of this cone is precisely this space. Okay? So, in other words, over the points on the interior of this cone, we associate to it a finite dimensional complex vector space. So, finite dimensional okay. And the other condition is that the set of points for which this finite dimensional vector space is non-zero, it's locally finite in the interior. So if you take any compact subset of the interior, there's only finitely many points that have a non-zero vector space sitting over them. And the morphisms are linear operators that are continuously controlled. So another definition that I'm going to try to draw the picture for. Okay, so if you have a morphism, it's given by a matrix. So you can look at the entry going from X to Y. So if we have point X and point Y, when this is non-zero, I like to think of it as it's saying you're allowed to move from X to Y. Okay? And so what the control condition is saying is that you cannot move arbitrarily close to the boundary. So the way you would describe that is if you have a neighborhood of the boundary, so if you have some point on the boundary here, take a neighborhood, you can find another one inside so that whenever you jump from outside the one you were given to inside the one you chose, that has to be zero. Okay, so you cannot move arbitrarily close to the boundary. And what this does, this gives you control over the morphisms in the category, and it also allows the topology of the boundary, which is the edges of the triangle here, it allows the topology to enter the picture, and in particular the topology of our compactification. So for each, no continuous functions. Yeah. For every point on the boundary, okay, so the boundary is anywhere here. for any point on the boundary in any given open neighborhood of that. You can find another neighborhood of that point so that if you're inside that neighborhood you picked to one outside the one you were given, that component has to be zero. So in particular, if you fix X, you can't, at some point, you can't get any further. It's only finitely many places you can go out of X. Okay, so for each point on the boundary, and for each neighborhood, U of Z, so U is the neighborhood of the boundary, of the whole thing. There exists a neighborhood V of Z such that the component from X to Y is zero, well, both directions, if X is not in U and Y is in V. So this is actually something it's been generalized from the similar category where the condition is a bounded condition. So you can't move beyond a bounded distance of where you are. So this is a generalization of that which eliminates the need for a metric space in particular.
What does moving mean?
That's my way of visualizing it as a picture. It just means that this component is non-zero. That's the way I mean it.
The
entry, right? So H of that, these are the finite dimensional vector spaces that sit over the points X and Y, and you're looking at the morphism from H to K. So it has a certain decomposition, and so we have this can be expressed as a matrix. So I'm considering the entry, X, Y. I'm defining this category. Yeah. Yeah. This is the definition. So this is the. Yeah. No, well, there is a definite connection. I mean, this condition is actually the key condition. And I mean, there's not enough time to explain all the details there, but that's the key condition to be able to do this. That's sort of the toughest condition to hold for a discrete group. Okay, so I'm trying to build up to defining this map in terms of these categories. So there's also a category we can associate to the suspension of X. So the suspension of X, we just collapse the bottom here to get the suspension. So it has the same objects because the interior of this space is exactly the same interior. The difference is, and so we also have linear operators as our morphisms that are continuously controlled with respect to the boundary here. Right? But the boundary of this one is different. Right? We have, right, that's the picture for the suspension of X. So the boundary is different. In particular, it's different right there, where we collapse the space. So the two categories are different, okay? Because the control condition is going to be different. And turns out that this Baumkamm map is going to come out of looking at the induced map on the categories, which comes from collapsing X. So this is induced. It's finite dimensional. So no. Yeah, yeah. So in particular, this is an additive category. So it sort of has properties like a group. So you need the zero object. So we take all possible, all possibles like this. That's right. And all possible morphisms like this. Categories are huge. Okay, now, so there's two things we need to mention before we get to there. One is, that's correct. That's correct. So anyway, so this is a nice way of describing this particular assembly map, because in this particular way, it has nice functorial properties when you do this. Okay, so first thing, we have a gamma action on the space. That produces a gamma action on the categories, and so I'll just explain what the upshot of that is. Something we want to consider, which is very important to this particular technique, is to look at the fixed category. So a fixed category, you're going to have an action on each object. So the object's going to be invariant under the action of gamma. Also, each h sub x, if you look at the subgroup of gamma that fixes x, that's going to put an invariant action on this piece of the object. Okay? So what it's doing is it's turning it into a CH module, a complex module with an action of the isotropy group. So the isotropy groups come into play when you look at the fixed category. And another fact is that if you have two points here, suppose they're in the same orbit, so they're translates of each other, then they'll have isomorphic complex vector spaces sitting over them. Okay, so this fixed category, I haven't defined it, I'm just telling you the upshot of what it is, has these properties, and on top of that, your morphisms are equivariant. Okay, so I'll come back to that in a moment in two directions, but we're going to wind up looking at, well, I didn't define what the action is on the category, but if you take the fixed category, the upshot of the def, that's right, on the fixed category, that's right, so I'll come back to that in a moment in two directions. Now, if you have a spectrum in the sense of topology, so not spectrum of an operator, but then you can define homology theories. Okay? So another thing that I want to try to avoid in this discussion is we have these additive categories, and if you have nice enough additive categories, there is a functor, and it was constructed by Hickson, Rowe, and Pedersen from C star categories with certain properties into the category of spectra, so that when you take homotopy groups of that spectrum, you get the topological K-theory groups. Okay, so it's this whole big passage of functors to get to the world of K-theory and K-homology. Okay, but there's a functor, which they call K-top, which goes from categories to spectra, so that when you take homotopy groups, you get the K-theory. And that's the way you proceed when you're trying to, or so the method that was used in algebraic K-theory is, right, we would apply a functor to this map. So we have a map of spectra whose homotopy groups give us that map. Okay? So the reason, so what we're getting at is, suppose you have a map of spectra. So there's a gamma action here. So this is gamma equivariant. And let's just suppose you can realize the fixed sets, right? So the map on fixed sets. Suppose that the homotopy groups of this gave you an assembly map, so or some map that you're interested in that you want to split. Okay, this is nice. So this is the homotopy theory, the topology that comes into this technique, is if you can realize it as a map of fixed sets. The reason is, so fixed sets, they don't have very good properties in general. So we have an equivariant map from S to T that induces an ordinary map from the fixed set, on the fixed sets. Now, it also turns out that if you have, suppose you knew that the original map from S to T, that this was, right, we have an equivariant map that is an ordinary homotopy equivalence. Okay, suppose you knew that. That does not imply that this is a homotopy equivalence. Because when you're dealing with equivariant homotopy, everything has to be equivariant. The map back, the homotopy, everything. So you don't know that in general. For example, just the universal space itself. The map from the universal space to a point is an equivariant map. The map is a homotopy equivalence because it's assumed to be contractible, but they're not gamma equivariantly homotopy equivalent. Okay, so you have problems when you want to deal with fixed sets, but and homotopy theory, but there's sort of a more homotopy friendly fixed set. So the way you see that is, we can think of this fixed set as being the equivariant maps from a point into the spectrum, or just think of this as a space. Right, because the action on the point is trivial, and so you can identify this set of maps with the fixed sets. Well, sorry, with the fixed points. And so the homotopy fixed set are the equivariant maps from your universal space into S. Okay, so there's a lot of big constructions here, but the nice thing is we have the collapse map from the universal space to a point, that's equivariant. So that induces a map this way, the opposite direction. So we get a diagram. Commutative diagram like this. So for the moment, this is the map we're interested in, and we want to produce a map coming back. And the reason why this is an improvement is because if we can show that this map and this map here are equivalences, then we have our map back. Okay? And the reason why that's possible is because this homotopy fixed set has really nice properties. In particular, it has the property that if right, so we have our equivariant map here. So if you look at the induced map on fixed sets by finite subgroups. So if this is an equivalence for every finite subgroup, then the homotopy fixed sets are also equivalent. That's not true for fixed sets, but it is true for the homotopy fixed set. And also this map, if S turns out to be a product of categories, this is automatically an equivalence. So this is what was used to prove under similar conditions to prove, or the same conditions, to prove that the assembly map in algebraic K3 was a split injection. Of course, you had a slightly different, use a different functor. You don't use the K-top functor, you use a different functor to allow you to algebraic K-theory, but it's the same idea. However, you can't realize the Baum-Conn assembly map as a map of fixed sets. Okay? The reason is, to use the K-top functor, we have to have C-star categories. In particular, your endomorphisms need to be C-star algebras. They're not, the way we've defined them so far. So you have to modify this. If you take a particular object and you look at the endomorphisms, they need to be C-star algebra, and they're not here.
Okay. What does it mean to say that an endomorphism is C-star algebra?
C-star algebra in the usual way. So here, well, we're going to have to modify our morphisms to make sense. So if you had...
It kind of seems to me that what you're saying is that it's almost as if what you're saying is that H and K are not C-star algebra.
Well, H and K are almost Hilbert spaces. Well, there's also a problem. They're not even bounded.
I don't understand that.
So the objects are all possible objects like that, and then all possible morphisms. So if you fix H, you can look at the.
So that's an algebraic direct object?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So deep. This almost sounds like the like Rose's course.
That's absolutely correct. That's how the connection was realized between this approach and the approach taken by Rowe and Hickson for coarse geometry to link it up with the Baum-Conn map. Yeah, so somewhere in the mid-90s, Hickson, Rowe, and Pedersen realized they were doing the same thing. Yeah, exactly. So, but before we do C-star stuff, we need to do things like complete and use bounded operators. So you modify this category. Okay, so we call the CR star of this. So what you do is you can keep the same objects, but before you define morphisms, you have to work with Hilbert spaces. So each of those objects is a pre-Hilbert space. So you just need to complete it. They have a unique Hilbert space completion. So you take objects. So if you you take the same objects, but when you talk about morphisms, you look at their Hilbert space completions, and then you take your linear operators that are continuously controlled, and you look at the bounded ones. So then each of the bounded ones extends uniquely to the Hilbert space completion. Okay. So now we have a subalgebra of bounded operators, and then you complete that. Okay.
For each dimension, you pick one, like the space of that dimension, and then it connects with all
the things. Well, something H here, this is the Hilbert space completion of something that looks like this.
And when you have an object, and each H has a Hilbert space, it's
always... each H sub X is a finite dimensional complex vector space.
Oh, just a finite dimensional.
That's right. That's right. The big thing, of course, is not then. And so what you do to complete it, you take the Hilbert sum. Right. Well, we also, our sum is going to be countable. We're taking locally finite.
What I'm saying, for each x, there are too many,
No, well, okay, so an object is a collection of H sub X's for each point. So one for each point. That's one object. For a different object, you would have a different choice. Okay? Yeah. Okay, so we're completing everything. In order to make this work, we take bounded operators before we complete, of course. But now we have a category, and we've lost strict control over morphisms, right? Because we've completed. But I mean, we can approximate any morphism in here by a continuously controlled one. So we still have some hope. Okay, now so then what we do is, we do the same type of construction on this fixed category. So we look at CR star of that. So what's happening is We do the same type of construction, but there's a gamma action everywhere, and there's equivariance wrapped into all these things. And so what we'd really like to be able to do is say, okay, well, is this category here a fixed category? Because we want to get fixed sets of spectra. All right, so we want to say that these two are the same thing, but they're not. The reason is, you can see here, right, once we take the fixed category, so we haven't yet completed, everything is equivariant. Then we complete. Here, we complete, then we force equivariance. So it's possible that you could have a morphism that's equivariant that's not a limit of equivariant ones. The only time you can say that for sure is if your group was finite, because you could just average and then you can make it work. So it seems like you're stuck. However, you're lucky that things go in the right way. So this is the map that gives you the assembly map, the Baum-Kahn map. And there's a natural functor from into this fixed category, right? Because the problem was going the other way. So we also have one coming here. Okay? And so now this thing is going to produce, when we apply the K-top functor here, up top we're going to get the map we want. Down here, we're getting a map that is nice to work with because it's a map of fixed sets. And so... Well, the K-top functor takes you, so this is a category, the K-top functor takes you to spectra. So then you can take homotopy groups and get your K-theory groups and K-homology groups. So something that I'm sweeping under the rug here is that you actually get the right things. And on the left-hand side in particular, that you're getting K-homology groups. There's a lot of stuff here. That's right. That's right. Here, a lot of it depends on how you define this K-top functor, which I want to try to avoid for the moment. But Hickson and Rowe define it. So, I mean, if you take, they have a definition where you can take a C-star algebra and associate to it a spectrum whose homotopy groups give you the K-theory groups of that C-star algebra that you started with. And so if you modify that a little bit, you can actually make it work for categories.
Yeah, but I'm not quite sure why you want to do that rather than just take the ordinary K groups once you've got the algebra.
Well, these are the categories. And also I haven't quite gotten yet to my technique for actually proving anything. And so that's where you're going to need this extra structure. So I would like to, if I can, I'll try to get to show you how that works. But
no.
Yeah, no. This way is a really sort of big way of attacking this problem. Yeah, it's a different approach. Completely. Which, I mean, in some ways is nice, in some ways is maybe unsettling, but it's definitely a big way of approaching the whole problem. So using big machinery to attack this. And of course you're always, you know, you're centered around this idea of these homotopy fixed sets as being nice objects in terms of homotopy theory. So anyway, with an abusive notation here, right, we wind up looking at this type of a diagram. Okay? And so, normally, we wouldn't have to deal with this top thing, but we would just have a fixed map of fixed sets, and then the goal is to show that these two things are eventually give homotopy equivalences, and then you're done. The problem is we don't have the map that we're interested in as a map of fixed sets, but luckily, I won't get into it, in this particular situation, these two are equivalent. And the reason is that you use the fact that you have a finite gamma CW complex, and you can build an induction argument. And the reason is, it does boil down to the fact that these two are the same if your group was finite. Okay, so you make use of that, because your isotropy is finite, and that comes into play here. Okay, so actually, you luck out, and these are the same. And then...
Is the same one on the right?
No. If they were the same on the right, then we would be done. Then we would have a map of fixed sets, but it's not the same on the right. Here, I mentioned that if your spectrum is a product, then this is automatically a weak homotopy equivalence. And actually, the proof that these two are the same under these conditions is very similar to the proof that these two are the same, where you do an induction on the cells. Okay? Now, so really, the reason why I'm skipping some stuff here is that the new ideas come here, because really this stuff comes out of work of Carlson and Pedersen, where they did the same situation for torsion-free groups. And then in my thesis, I looked at the algebraic K-theory version of this for groups with torsion. So this added torsion was a problem, because over here, you see that this condition here, right, if it's torsion-free, then if you know that, then this is the only case to consider is that if this is an ordinary equivalence, then you automatically get it for the homotopy fixed sets. But with torsion, you have stuff to check, lots of stuff to check. And so, with the last minute, I'll try to mention what happens. Okay, so in the case of the dihedral group here, right, we have the trivial group. But then all the other groups are some conjugate of one of those two Z2s. And they all do the same thing. They flip at some integer. Okay, so let's just consider one particular one where we flip at zero. Okay? And we want to try to show that this condition is true, and then we'll have the bottom map is done. Okay, so this is what you have to prove. And it relies on work of Carlson and Pedersen, where they showed that this induced map that this gave you an equivalence unequivariantly, but it gives you equivalence as long as X is contractible. Okay? So the problem is with torsion, you wind up having to look at fixed sets by your finite subgroups. So in this particular setting, we'll look at one of the Z2s. So we're looking at fixed categories by the Z2. Of course, also the CR star version. So just real quick to analyze what that means, right? So we have our space, we're flipping just at zero, and we have equivariance everywhere. So it feels like all you need to know is what happens on one side, and then you know what happens everywhere. But that's not quite true, because you could have jumping back and forth here. And so the main tool in this entire theory is the following. All right, so this is a picture of this category, okay? And we have this map is represented by this. So you can build sort of a short exact sequence of categories. So the way you do that is sort of the quotient would be try to think of the best way to describe it. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at all the objects Right? So if you look at the limit set of all the points for which these h sub x's are non-zero, if you look at the limit points, right, that'll be something on the boundary. So if we require that they be that they live at zero, okay, then this gives you a subcategory. And if you, it's a subcategory in a very nice way so that you can look at a quotient category. And what the quotient does, right, if we focus in on the on zero, the quotient is going to focus away. And so in the form of a germ category, so you identify morphisms if they agree on a neighborhood of the boundary away from where you looked at. And so last thing I'll say, the reason why you can proceed further here is when you have this short exact sequence of categories in the land of spectra, this gives you a fibration of spectra. And fibrations of spectra are good because when you take homotopy groups, you get a long exact sequence. And that's the basic tool in algebraic topology. And so we want to prove an equivalence here. Well, we would do that by proving equivalence on the ends. And you can see here, if we do the same thing down below, right, if we focus our objects here, these are exactly the same categories. Over here, we have to do something a little bit more difficult. Look at the germs again. That's an equivalence. But now our reasoning of saying, well, this half tells the whole story works because of the control. Okay, so in other words, if you look at the quotient of this space by the action, we get this space. And before we were saying, well, this should tell the entire story, right? If you know what happens here, then that tells you what happens there. But there could be problems, like when you lift it, right, and then you just spread it out by equivariance. So if there's movement here, then, well, you put movement there and then spread it out by equivariance. But how do you know what to do in between? You don't know what to do. There's a problem. But the germs take care of that coupled with the control condition because morphisms, right, when you're looking at morphisms out here, that movement has to be very short. And when we take equivalence classes of such morphisms, the only thing we have to worry about is what happens far away from the center. Right? So the center was causing us problems, but now we focus away from it by taking equivalence classes, and so this control condition dominates. And it says that the only time you have to worry is when you're close to the boundary. And when you're close to the boundary, right, you can't have movement back to the middle. So that tells you exactly what we want, what our intuition was telling us over here, that if we have movement here, we have movement here, and then we spread it out, and that tells the entire story. So these categories wind up being equivalent. And the important thing is that here we had a fixed category by a fixed group, and that's difficult to work with, but we've absorbed the action here by taking the quotient. Okay, so this category here is, well, CX modded out by the action. Okay? So that's an improvement. So I'll stop there. Thank you.